This podcast is supported by Understood Explains. As parents, we are often having to figure out things as we go, and that is very true for our children's education. And to help you out, I want to tell you about a podcast called Understood Explains. This season is hosted by teacher and special education expert Uliana Ortube, and she discusses all the things you'd want to know about individual education plans, or IEPs, what they are, why they're needed, who benefits from them, and what to expect when you have meetings with teachers. I could have really used this podcast when my son had an IEP for speech when he was six. I was overwhelmed trying to understand the process and what everything meant. The episode on Understood Explains, Does My Child Need an IEP, was the kind of info that would have really helped me get the most out of the educational support of the IEP for my son. And if you need that kind of support, I really recommend this podcast. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. Welcome to Mom in Mind. I'm perinatal psychologist and host Dr. Kat. There's more to the story than just postpartum depression, and this podcast aims to share it all. From personal stories and lived experience to experts who break down the ups and downs of life from getting pregnant, pregnancy, perinatal loss, and postpartum adjustment to parenthood. While this is not psychotherapy or medical advice, it is all of the stuff you ever wanted to know about mental health and new parenthood. Hi, and welcome back to the Mom in Mind podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kat. On our episode today, I'm joined by Derek and Rowena Winkler, and they are sharing their experience through postpartum psychosis. Rowena experienced this condition, and she shares with us what it was like for her from the start of the psychosis through hospitalization, and then afterwards, what it was like to integrate back into home and what the healing journey has been like. And parallel to that, Derek, as her husband, is sharing his experience of what it was like from his perspective, what he saw, what he experienced, and what kind of support he also needed through this journey. We don't often have a lot on this podcast, a lot of people sharing in this way where, you know, the spouse or another family member is sharing from their perspective what was going on. But I think this is incredibly necessary and very important, specifically when we're talking about postpartum psychosis, because it is such a delicate condition and leaves people just so vulnerable to the impacts of this condition. To be able to hear from both the person experiencing it and the support person, because as you'll hear, I mean, this is impactful to the family. It's a major life event. And because postpartum psychosis is so misunderstood and mischaracterized, it's really important to humanize this and take the stigma away and make sure people know that treatment is available and people can heal from things like this, and stop making it be this, you know, thing that happens to other people. These are real people who are having real experiences, and we just have to stop the stigma, because the stigma is part of what is keeping people from getting the help that they need. And as you can hear, you know, although a difficult journey, people, when they get the right kind of help and support, can come out the other side feeling better. Derek is a software engineer manager and father of two children that he shares with his wife, Rowena. Dr. Rowena Winkler is a career and empowerment coach that helps high achievers unlock their authentic genius and gain clarity in their jobs, businesses, and lives through the power of communication, using her PhD in communication. Along with mystic modalities such as astrology, human design, tarot, Dr. Winkler's coaching method enables clients to tap into self-love, build confidence, get unstuck, and make change. And I'm really grateful to them that they are sharing their journey and experience so that anybody who's out there suffering or is concerned about someone that they love can know that help is available and be able to understand some of the signs and symptoms to look out for somebody that they love. Now let's meet with Rowena and Derek. Welcome, Rowena and Derek. Thank you so much for coming on and wanting to share your story with us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, I'm really grateful that you both wanted to come on and share. I think this is really important to have you know, different perspectives and different experiences shared, especially about something like postpartum psychosis, because I'm sure you already know and have seen that people have misconceptions about what it is and what happens and all of that stuff. So having both of your perspectives is really great, and I think will be informative and supportive to a lot of people. So I first want to get a little bit of just kind of a backdrop on where in your parenting journey did this start?
Yeah, so the postpartum psychosis happened in my second pregnancy. This was the second time going through postpartum. Just to back up a little bit with our daughter, who was our first child, she was born in 2020, right before the world shut down due to COVID-19. You know, I actually suffered a psychotic break when I was 18 years old. So when that happened, the psychiatrist at the time mentioned that if I were to have children, I could suffer from postpartum depression. That's all she said. PPD, nothing about psychosis. Mm-hmm. And so when I had my daughter in 2020, We were on the lookout for that, if there are any signs of PPD or anxiety or anything of that nature. And, you know, nothing had happened. So fast forward now to 2023, when I had our son the second time around, we had the same, you know, looking out the same signals. And unfortunately, I did go through another psychotic break. So I'll pass it over to Derek to share a little bit about what that looked like from his perspective, given I gave that little bit of a backdrop there.
Okay, great.
Yeah, and I'll also say, so in 2020, you know, because things shut down, like I was home from work a lot more. I actually went after our daughter was born, I went back to work for a little while, and then I got sent home, and then I was on a week on, week off schedule. Like, so I was there to help more. I don't know if that changed things or not. Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked about it a little bit. There's no way to know, right? What if the world had been in a more normal state, if things would have been different. But this time around, definitely, Rowena clearly was having a lot more trouble with anxiety. She was very hypervigilant about things with our son. You know, the psychotic break happened at about 2.5 weeks after he was born. Mm-hmm. But I started noticing things a couple days before that. Nothing super alarming, but definitely, like, looking back in hindsight, I definitely recognized some things that were concerning. She wasn't really sleeping. You know, she was up all hours of the night, maybe was getting 2 or 3 hours of sleep a night, and then actually down to almost 0 hours of sleep a night. You know, I'd wake up and turn over in the middle of the night or something, and she'd be awake, like checking on our son. And, you know, I'd be like, hey, are you okay? Is he okay? What's going on? You know, and it culminated in a night where she basically, he kind of made a noise in his sleep, and she turned around so her head was next to the bassinet where our feet, bassinet was at the foot of our bed. Mm-hmm. And so turned around so that her head was there. Like, I woke up early, like to him crying or something, and she was facing the opposite way in our bed. And then I found out later that morning that she basically didn't sleep at all that night because she was so concerned, like, that he was going to die, like that he was going to stop breathing or have a breathing issue and he was going to die. And then throughout that day, that was a Sunday, I remember it very clearly, toward the end of August. And I mean, she at one point told me, she said, oh, I'm so tired, I'm dissociating. And I was like, well, that's an odd thing to say. That was number one. We actually sent our daughter, like, out with a friend who has a daughter her age. And so, you know, to get a little less chaos in the house, because having a 3-year-old in the house while you're trying to manage a newborn is chaotic. And Rowena was starting to have some hallucinations. I didn't quite know they were hallucinations yet at that point, but at one point she heard our daughter's voice calling for her, even though she wasn't in the house. And later that night, well, let me back up. Wow. So earlier in the day, Rowena said to me, oh, Robbie is so big, he's like a little man. And I was like, oh yeah, he's growing so well. You know, he's a little 2 weeks old. It didn't seem odd until later that night she said to me, did Robbie shrink? Did he get smaller? And that was a red flag in my brain. I was like, that's a really odd thing to say. And then she asked me, she said, did I feed a different baby earlier today? And that was really concerning. And then the final sort of red flag that went up in my brain is I was putting my daughter to bed in the other room, and Rowena was with Robbie, was with the baby. And I heard her, well, I heard him cry. And then she got up and I couldn't see what was going on in the room, but she, like, got up and tended to him. And she then about 30 seconds later yelled, I need help. And I ran in the room and she handed him to me like he was like a sack of potatoes, and she didn't know what to do with him. Like, with the blankest look on her face, sort of like didn't realize this was her child, didn't know what to do with him or anything like that. And in my brain, that was the trigger. I was like, as soon as Carrie is in bed, I'm calling 911. And that's what I did.
Okay.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I just want to include this, that when Derek mentioned the anxiety, I was just talking about talking about this with a friend last night, that I think one of the differences between my first postpartum, my first postpartum experience. And second is that when we had our first baby, I didn't really know much, right? It was, you don't know what you don't know.
Right, right.
Whereas I think since I had a child and had a baby with Robbie with the second, I was so hyped because I knew all the different things that could go wrong because I've had more information. So I thought that was something that was different between the two. So
sure. I thank you both for this so far. I also want to, I guess, kind of go, or for you, Rowena, like looking back now from where you're at, where do you think for you, you started to feel like things were not okay or like not normal for you? Yeah. What was your experience like from birth?
I think that it wasn't that about that 2 week window, as Derek mentioned, I wasn't sleeping as well. And for me, I need to have a good, I'm not one of those people that could operate well on little sleep. Like I need my sleep. So once that started happening, I did notice, you know, for example, I'm a writer. And so I was writing a lot of late night poetry and notes, and it seemed very erratic, as maybe that's the right word. It just seemed like a lot of like musings, like very just jotting things down on my phone and things that happened. And at the time they felt like brilliant pieces of poetry, but reading back on it now, it's like, oh, like something is not right here. And actually the first time I had my psychotic break when I was 18, I did similar things. I wrote in a lot of notebooks. So like there's this free writing that happens when I'm getting to that state. And also what happened in my experience is there was a lot of the hallucinations and the delusions. So, you know, when Derek was recounting what had happened, I started thinking that this was a game, or that this was like a game show, and that I was playing a part in this bigger thing. Like it felt very Truman Show to me, or something of that nature. Like it didn't feel like reality. So as I felt myself slipping from reality, I mean, I think maybe subconsciously I knew something was wrong. But in that moment, I was thinking that I was just playing this game or doing the show. You know, I have a theater background too. So a lot of it I thought was like a show or something of that nature.
Yeah. Thank you for describing that. I think what is important for, I guess, you know, people who are learning about postpartum psychosis, maybe like hearing our chat today, is important to know is that there's might be a period of time where some stuff doesn't quite feel right, but then there's another period of time where it's, you're in it and you don't know that you're in that state. So it sounds like what you're describing right there, the kind of Truman Show feeling, like, was there a part of it that you kind of knew something didn't feel quite right? And then now looking back on it, you, hearing Derek's account, you know that you were in an altered state.
I think at the time, I didn't realize how much I was slipping. But I mean, because Derek called 911, I went to the ER, and then I went to an inpatient hospital. I was entered inpatient. By the time I got to the hospital, there are moments of that stay that I don't even remember. They're just, as the weeks and months have come on and on, I've started remembering little snippets again. But I don't know, Derek, did you notice, you know, as you were recounting what happened, did you, like, you said that blank stare, like, you did you notice that I was slipping into a psychotic state, or what were you thinking?
I mean, that whole day I had concerns. I mean, I was like, they started out as yellow flags, right? I was like, this is concerning, but it's not on its, each little piece on its own was not a problem. It's sort of all together. And it was really when I realized that she was hallucinating auditory and visually that I was like, oh, this is a problem. I don't think I, again, hindsight is 2020. Looking back, obviously, I'm like, oh yeah, you were slipping and you slowly were on this downhill, like into this place. And obviously, you know, for you, it's, that's what's so hard about when you're having any kind of psychiatric problem, like your brain is lying to you, is fooling you. It's telling you that this is normal. Even if you have that moment where you're like, wait, this isn't normal. By the time you realize it's happening, you're like, wait, but this is fine. This is reality, right? This is the, how I'm perceiving reality. So this is reality to me. So yeah, I mean, hindsight is, you know, obviously things were going down, but at the time I, you know, it all happened so fast too. It just, it was only over, it was, you know, like 8 hours, 10 hours or something, all this went down.
Oh, right. So, was there, Derek, from your perspective, did you notice, did it feel like there was any like waxing and waning? Like sometimes she felt like her normal self and then other times she didn't, or did it feel like she was cool and then she wasn't?
That day, that Sunday, it was clear downhill descent. Like there was no, I mean, not to, I don't want to put a negative spin on it, right? But like there was a clear progression. In the days leading up to that, yeah, there were good moments and bad moments. You know, there were moments where she was, you know, a normal great mom, as she always has been and is right now. And there were moments where she was clearly struggling and I was doing my best to manage three people in my household, you know, the two kids and her, and trying to make sure that everyone was happy and healthy and making sure that I was happy and healthy, you know.
This podcast is sponsored by Paired. One of the things I hear weekly is how clients feel distant or not as connected to their partners, and also how they'd like to feel heard and seen by their partners. So for all you partners out there, it might be time to try Paired. It's an app that helps couples connect in a meaningful way, especially for couples who either feel disconnected, don't have time to sit down together, or who are just wanting to keep the connection going. This app is great. My husband and I are on it, and one of the things I love are the games where I answer a set of fun or interesting questions, and then he does the same, and we see where our answers line up or are different. It's a really cool way of learning something new about him, even though we've been together over 20 years. And there are a bunch of other great questions geared towards connection and understanding and intimacy that, when you share your answers, can help you and your partner understand each other better. Share the love this Mother's Day by going to paired.com/mind to get a 7-day free trial and 25% off if you sign up for a subscription. That's paired.com/mind to sign up today. Let's give the gift of connection this Mother's Day. A happier relationship starts here.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tiny humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Rowena, so your experience internally, and I know you're kind of having some memories come back now, but from what you can remember, what was that day like? What were you experiencing internally?
Yeah. So as Derek mentioned, that night, the night before I went into the full psychosis, I had not slept at all. So, you know, I had my head at the end of the bed to make sure Robbie was okay. And even before Derek had woken up, I texted my old doula. She wasn't able to be our doula for our second child, but she was the doula for our first, and I'm still in close contact with her. I texted her and said if she worked, if she did nights with families, because like I was even saying, like, I'm not doing well. I haven't been sleeping. So I think I had a sense that, you know, I wasn't doing great, but it just started. Yeah. As Derek mentioned, by the time he had gotten up and he found out I hadn't slept, that's when I mentioned I was disassociating. And that's what it felt like. It felt like an out of body type of experience where I was going through the motions, but I didn't have full ownership of my body. Like, it was a really wild feeling.
Did it feel scary to you?
Not scary as so much just concerning and a little, yeah, it was just strange.
Like, what is going on?
Yeah, kind of like a, and I have a PhD, so I have like a research type brain. So it was kind of just a curiosity, like, whoa, what's going on? I remember that morning, actually, I was stuttering, like I couldn't speak right when I was trying to talk to my daughter, I think because I hadn't slept, so, or because things were happening. And yeah, and as that day kept going, I could sense myself getting more and more paranoid. Like the paranoia started. Derek, I don't know if you remember this, but at one point I thought I had COVID. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, yeah. I actually do remember that. I'd forgotten that, but yeah.
Yeah, because I felt like I couldn't smell things. So I thought I had COVID.
Yeah,
and
that's
right. So I felt myself getting into this state of paranoia. And Derek's right. I do remember thinking our daughter was home, but she wasn't. I do remember being confused about the baby, that I was feeding a different baby. Mm-hmm. And then the other part of it was when our daughter came home. Oh, and that was the other thing too. I talked to Derek about setting up a play date for our 3-year-old, because I think I also sensed that I needed to sleep, or that I needed to do something to take care of this. And I thought that we could just manage it. by me sleeping or by me resting. But then I also noticed that when she came home from her play date, Derek, again, I don't know if you remember me saying this, I like thought that they gave Carrie a script and that Carrie was like saying things to me that were like part of a script that like I had to like know this role. Again, it was like that play thing. Like I thought that like I had to say certain things and that they got Carrie to like speak to me in a certain way so that I could win the game, or it just got more and more. And then we got to the hospital. Our friend brought me to the ER. Derek stayed with the kids. And Derek, I don't know if you want to talk about that part, how you called 911 and that piece of it too before I get into it.
Yeah.
You didn't seem scared until later in the day. Early in the morning, you seemed incredibly frustrated. You were frustrated with yourself. You were frustrated with Robbie. You know, you were frustrated with the situation that you frustrated. You're like, I'm not sleeping. And you were like mad. And you were, you know, you were mad at me. You're mad at everything. You're mad at the world, right?
Like, I don't remember that.
I mean, and you were like yelling at me that you were like not sleeping. I mean, and then as the day progressed, yeah, you seemed more scared. You seemed more paranoid when you thought you heard Carrie and I told you that she was not there. You like cried out, oh God, and looked like you were gonna cry. Like you started to sort of sense that something was wrong. Yeah. And then so I was also texting with my sister-in-law throughout the day, my brother's wife, to be like, because they have kids, and you know, I was just like, hey, I don't know what to do. I'm really struggling. What can I do for Rowena? How can I help her? And most of it she was just like, just try to get her to sleep. And you know, and that's what we were trying to do. So we sent Carrie away, we put Robbie down for a nap, we were laying in our bed together. I was trying to get her to calm down and get her to go to sleep, and she just wouldn't. I think it was just she was past the breaking point. You know, there was a point of no return. And so once our daughter was in bed, and I actually texted 911, which I think it's actually good people know that you can do that in most places, if not everywhere. I think it's mostly for like domestic abuse or in a case where you don't feel safe to call. But it was actually really helpful because Rowena kept telling me, don't call anyone, don't call anyone. She was so insistent that she's like, I just need to sleep. You know, I just need to call, you know, and she was so insistent. I didn't want to make it worse by her knowing that I had contacted. So I was texting 911 and the operator was like, or whoever I was speaking with, I guess they're called an operator, said, okay, we'll send a police officer. And I was like, no, I want an ambulance. And they were like, no, we generally send a police officer and a mental health counselor to like assess. And so it took them a little while to show up. In the meantime, I texted a friend of ours, very close friend of ours, who had taken Rowena to the hospital once before. She actually got a uterine infection after this pregnancy. So she was at the ER 3 days after, you know, we were home for a day and then she had to go back to the ER and get antibiotics. But so I texted that same friend, who, shout out to Steph, if she ever hears this podcast, we'll probably send her a link. But she, I mean, best friend you could ever ask for, honestly. She was so helpful through all this. But she came and she, so I could stay with the kids, she took Rowena to the ER. But yeah, she came and she was sitting with us when someone from, it's like grassroots, they're local here in Maryland, in Columbia, Maryland. I don't know if they have a wider presence, but it's like grassroots mental health something, something. I could look up the exact name if you'd like. But someone from that organization came, and with a police officer, just to make sure, obviously, the situation is safe. Her name was Angelica. She came. I greeted her at the front door. I gave her a quick, like, 90-second, here's what's going on. You know, she came upstairs and she talked to Rowena for maybe 5 minutes and then, you know, sort of was like, Rowena, I think that you should check yourself into the hospital this evening. And she was a saint. She waited around for us because Rowena wanted to like feed Robbie one more time. It had been hours and her, you know, her breasts were full. She needed to, for her benefit and for Robbie, she needed to feed him. So we got one final feeding in and then Steph, you know, took her to the hospital and Angelica went with her.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
It's a great organization. I'm actually going to look up the name for you right now.
Sure.
I want to shout out to this amazing organization. It's the Grassroots Crisis Intervention Center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's amazing that they stayed with you. She stayed with you guys. So then the friend and the counselor took you, Rowena. Do you remember going?
I'm laughing because there's a funny piece to this part of the story, which, I mean, with all things, right? Derek and I, our relationship is based off sometimes when sad or bad things happen, we like joke about it later. So I'll preface it by saying that we still like to have some humor in these situations because my friend, so Stephanie took me to the hospital and the woman, Angelica, from the Grassroots Crisis Intervention Services said mostly to Steph, when you go in there, tell them it's postpartum psychosis. I'm like, okay. But I heard it, and all of a sudden, I turned into presentation, you know, TED Talk Rowena for some reason, and walked up right to the ER front desk and said,
postpartum psychosis, please.
Like she was ordering off a menu. Yeah.
Like I was ordering a menu. Like I was like, and the woman, I actually do remember this part. Angelica looks at Steph and is like, what is happening? Because I thought I was so out of it. Actually, another thing came up too. Again, these things have been coming up back to me as I've recovered. On the way to the hospital, and Derek, I don't even think I told you this. So this is like a special, doing a special unveiling of this. On the way to the hospital, I thought I saw my mom turn like my mom's car in front of us. I remember saying, mommy. So like there's these like interesting things, and this comes with the hallucinations, right? Where as I stayed in the hospital, I thought things on the TV were just for me. I was reading books and thinking it was just for me. Right. I was, you know, looking at on the wall, like looking at the whiteboard of everybody's name. And I thought it was like a directed toward me, like it was a game with like different players and things. So yeah, I got to the ER and spent the night there. That piece comes in flashes, you know. I don't like, I refuse to put on the bracelet, I think, to at that part, I think because I was in the worst of it. I don't remember too much, but similar to what I said before, there were people like staff at the hospital that I thought were people in my life. I was like, oh, that's John. Oh, and that's so-and-so. So that was happening too. And my friend was witnessing me do this, like pointing out people randomly at the hospital, thinking again that, oh, you're not in a real hospital, Rowena. This is a fake hospital. And this is a, you know, Broadway show that you're part of now. And soon enough, everyone's going to say, we, you know, I thought it was like a show that they were, that they made for me to tell me how much they loved me, like all of my friends. Yeah.
So did you, or were you hearing, well, I guess now after the fact, did Stephanie shared her perspective of that?
Yes, yes, she did. She said, I did not want to go to the bathroom. She had to take me, she had to, I was extra paranoid to go out there. And the reason from my perspective why I didn't want to go out there was because I thought I was, that people were taking videos of me and posting it on social media. I thought that I was going to be on TikTok and that everyone was going to see. Because like, I remember one point, like they were trying to strip me down. Like I thought that all of my wild antics were going to be on social media and that was like gonna be my reputation on the line or something. So I was paranoid to leave my room in the ER. And my friend reminded me like, oh yeah, I had, she had to like hold my hand and like force me to go to the bathroom. That was one of the main things. I wouldn't let her leave the room. The ER made a special accommodation for her to stay with me. Like she slept in a chair next to me that night because I wouldn't let her leave. Like I just didn't want to let go of her hand. That was like one of the worst nights. Yeah, I'd say for sure.
At what point, how long were you in the ER before, I assume then you were transitioned to a hospital?
Derek, do you know the exact inpatient timing?
Yeah. Oh, I know the timeline.
Yeah. What happened?
What happened?
So, and I don't want to spend too much time on this part, right? Because I want to be able to talk. So she went to the hospital. It was Sunday night. I got a call Monday morning from a social worker at the hospital. Basically, you know, they had given the initial evaluation. And obviously the ER is not really set up well for psychiatric cases or for behavioral cases. And so, but I got a call from the social worker and they were like, hey, yeah, they evaluated her. They are giving sort of the initial diagnosis is postpartum psychosis. And unfortunately, they didn't have space in their behavioral unit for her. So the social worker was calling around to other hospitals in the area to find out where they had space for her. So she had to spend 24 hours in the ER, which, like I said, an ER is not a great place to be when you're in the middle of psychosis. I mean, having never been through it myself, but having talked to Rowena about it and heard her feelings and stuff, it's not great. And I actually, well, I'll get to that later. I ended up spending some time in the ER with her because she, after she was discharged, she had to go back, but that's, we'll get to that. So she was in the emergency department at Howard County General for one day, basically 24 hours. And then they found a place for her, suburban hospital in Bethesda, Maryland. And she was transferred by ambulance, Monday night, and then Tuesday morning is when her treatment like fully started there. And then she was in the hospital for about, I think it was 10 days. And those first few days were rough. I mean, she didn't know where she was. She didn't know what was going on. In the ER, they take everything from her. She has no personal belongings allowed with her, I think, because I don't think that's normal 100%, but for behavioral cases, for psychiatric cases, it is. And so Steph brought all of her stuff back to me when she left her. And then, but once she got into the behavioral unit at Suburban, we she was allowed to have personal belongings. So I arranged a time, like outside of normal visiting hours to come, which are pretty limited, to come and like bring stuff to her. And so I did that. And I visited with her while I was there. And she was, I mean, still fully in the psychosis at this point. And it was very difficult to be there and to see her in that state. You know, she really wasn't herself. She didn't know what was going on. She couldn't, you know, she was so excited to see me. And I had to leave because I had to go pick up our kids from daycare. And, the baby wasn't in daycare. What did I do with Robbie that day? I'm trying to remember. Did someone watch him? I don't know, but I had to pick up our daughter from daycare. I can't remember what I did with Robbie. That's okay. He was safe, trust me.
Was my mom there yet?
No, not yet. No. So it was probably, I think Steph watched Robbie. But anyway, doesn't matter. I had to go back because I had to pick up Carrie from daycare, and Rowena like didn't want me to leave, was like holding onto my arm, clutching my arm. I think I was like her only anchor to the real world, right? And I think that she, you know, so I left, and then I ended up talking. So the hospital assigns you a social worker, which is great. And talking with the social worker the next day, I was like, oh, can I come visit again? And he was like, I really don't think that's a good idea. Rowena had a really terrible night. And she was like screaming and crying and asking for you and stuff like that. He's like, I really think, he's like, you can video call with her like during visiting hours. She gets her phone during visit hours. He's like, I don't think you should come until she's in a better place. And I was like, okay. So that was hard to hear, but also a bit of a relief because this hospital was 45 minutes to an hour from our house, you know, versus the emergency room it took her to was 5 minutes from our house.
Right.
And so, you know, not an easy drive, and especially having to arrange care for the kids and all that kind of stuff. So it was a little bit of a burden off, but also I was really sad because it's my wife and I care about her and she's very sick.
Can I ask? So, I mean, this was 10 days in that particular hospital. Rowena, I assume you didn't really have any sense of time during this, but like, was it like for you?
Well, I honestly don't even remember that first visiting session that Derek just described. So,
oh, really? I didn't know that.
I don't remember much. Those first days they were in and out. One thing that, and this happened the first time I went into psychosis when I was 18, was I was singing a lot. So I was singing a lot of musical theater. At one point, I thought I was in Miss Saigon. At one point, I thought I was Les Mis. You know, I was just singing all these things, and probably much to the disturbance of the others that were there, but I had no idea. Yeah, I just remember being in a strange place. I don't know if I fully knew that I was in a hospital per se. I just knew that I was somewhere, like they were keeping me somewhere. When Derek mentioned the ambulance that took me that night, I thought that I was in an escape room. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to take off the butt buckles, and the men in the ER were like, ma'am, please like lay down, you know? So I didn't know where I was. But I don't know, Derek, when do you say day five?
It was at least 3 or 4 days. Yeah. I mean, they have to get the medication in you, and they have to, you know, your brain has to start to like, you know, normalize a little bit and all that stuff. So it's hard to tell you exactly. I do know that she was still paranoid, you know, so basically visiting hours are like 6 to 8 p.m. And, you know, you can either go visit in person or during that time, I almost said inmates, the patients are given their phones, like so they can contact family and they can do whatever they need to. It is very restrictive, and obviously for good reason, right? So, you know, I'd be on a video call with her. I did have friends coming over to like help with the kids at night, because, you know, managing a newborn and a 3-year-old by yourself is doable, you know, but it's very difficult. So I did have I'm very fortunate. We have a great support group here locally. But yeah, I was on a call with her at one point, and she was very accusatory. She's like, where are you? Who's there? Are you wearing pants? Like, and I was like, what do you think is going on? Like, obviously her, you know, you said you thought I was like a cult leader or something, and that there were, she watches a lot of true crime, and she thought that I was like, you know, a cult leader that was, you know, doing sketchy things with my followers or something.
I thought the hospital was a cult too. I thought, again, it's interesting because I, as Derek said, I watch a lot of these shows and I learn about, you know, there was a Netflix show, like How to Be a Cult Leader. That was one of the last things I watched. And I guess it's just my brain piecing all these things together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So at one point I thought, oh, I'm in a cult. I need to find out ways to escape. That was also in that first couple of days, one of my main objectives was figuring out how to escape and trying to do like an Ocean's 11-esque heist or something like that, and figure out a way out of where I was. So yeah, it's just wild that the things that the media that I consume became a part of my psychosis. And to Derek's point, yeah, I was very paranoid and concerned.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just curious, like what it was like to, once the medication started taking effect and you had some sleep, what it was like to be coming out of that state, what it felt like and what you were thinking.
Yeah, it felt, it was a relief for sure. Those things that I did while I was in psychosis started coming back to me. And I was like, wow, I was calmer, you know, because I was very, you know, I'm a very energetic, expressive person by nature. So I think I was kind of just really hype in the hospital. But once I started getting out of it, and that probably could have, it's probably medication too, let's be honest, right? So I was definitely calming down a little bit. Mm-hmm. I was attending our group, you know, therapy sessions and being more of an active participant that made sense. I was, you know, I was saying hi to people in the halls. I was a much more agreeable and chiller. And yeah, I was also cooperating with, you know, the social workers and the doctors because I wanted to go home, right? You know, it's hard to be away from your family for 10 days. And Derek like alluded to this. I had to go back to the hospital a second time some days later because I had a side effect to one of my medications. So that was rough, but yeah, I think just kind of like how I gradually descended into the psychosis, I kind of eased my way out of it as well.
Okay.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
So of the second hospitalization was not due to, or was due to, say, symptoms returning, or?
No,
so
it was. It,
go ahead. So, yeah, so she got out of a hospital, and actually the first, like, day or two, everything was pretty good. And she was still having a little bit of, like, we call them, like, the nighttime scaries. She didn't want it to be fully dark in the house, you know, and didn't really want to go outside at night and things like that. So a couple little things. She would get overstimulated easily, a couple of things that were sort of lingering, but, like, nothing serious. She was able to be around the kids, and she was not hallucinating and doing all those kind of things.
For the most part, kind of, like, returned to her, who you know her to be.
Yes, 90-95% back to who she was before. Just a couple of little things. But then a couple of days later, she started really not being herself. She was, well, we found out later that she was having a side effect to the haloperidol that she was taking called akathisia, which is not something they had prepared us for. Mm-hmm. You know, I wish I had known that this is a known symptom of this medication, but she basically went back to not sleeping because it's like an inner restlessness. She felt the need to get up and walk. She couldn't really, she was having like racing thoughts and blocking thoughts. She couldn't really talk or speak. Mm-hmm. And it got progressively worse over several days into the point where, and then we called, by the way. What's really difficult is when they discharge you from the hospital, I really appreciate everything they try to do. They set you up with a therapist. They set you up with a psychiatrist on the outside, all these things. But it's like a week gap from the time that she was discharged to the hospital to when those appointments started. Mm-hmm. And when we started noticing things were wrong, there was nowhere to turn. Like, you can't get a hold of the provider at the hospital. Like, all you can do is call up to the behavioral unit and they leave a message for the provider and you might get a call back the next day. And I will say that the psychiatric NP and the psychiatrist doctor at the hospital, eventually when I spoke to them, were very helpful, but it's very difficult to get a provider for any kind of acute
needs.
Yeah. And so that's how we ended up back in the ER. We even tried to go, there is actually a local, what would you call it? What is Shepherd Pride? It's like an outpatient, it's a psychiatric urgent care that's mm-hmm. like not far from here. And we tried that and we sat in the waiting room for hours and they evaluated her and said, oh yeah, clearly you're having a difficult time. We can get you into our day hospital, you know, next week. And it's like, mm-hmm. but what do we do now? So it was very difficult. So we actually ended up, I think it was a Thursday morning, I ended up taking her back to the ER because the akathisia was so bad that she wasn't sleeping. I wasn't sleeping. Like, we talk about the fact that she kept getting into bed and getting out of bed and getting into bed, getting out of bed. The sound of like our bed frame, like creaking as she got mm-hmm. into and out of bed was like, it was like nails on a chalkboard to me. Mm-hmm. I was like, it was very triggering to me. And I was like ready to like put my hand through a wall. Mm-hmm. And I'm not normally a violent person. So she ended up back in.
Yeah. I mean, this has to have a cumulative effect on you too. I mean, you're worried about her, you're caring about her, managing stuff at home. There's no way it can't be affecting you on some level.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I mean, we talk a lot about like caregiver burnout is real, you know, even to this day, like months after this happened, she and I are still talking about, you know, effects that it's had on our relationship and things like that. We both see therapists, you know, it's very helpful. I actually had a pretty big epiphany with my therapist on Friday and I came home and she and I had a really deep conversation about it and how it's affecting our marriage. You know, I'm not going to go into details, but like we had a very deep, profound conversation. We've talked about it several times since then. You know, it's like trying to really have good, open communication with each other about what we're thinking and feeling because it does affect us both.
Sure. It's a major kind of life event that no one expects or hopes for that it's going to feel or look this way. And just like any kind of, I don't know, the way I think about like any kind of severity of mental health is not exactly parallel, but it's similar to like breaking your leg. You like, it happens and then it takes a while to like come back out and to the healing process. And there's like, you can't start running on it right away. It takes time. You got to figure out how to get around in this kind of healing phase. And it sounds like, you know, you guys are in it well into the process of healing, but it does take time. It's a major thing to happen in both of your life. Yeah. So then the second hospital stay, just briefly, how long was that?
7 days, 1 week.
7 days. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That was, you know, very similar to like the end of my last day, because in this instance, it was just weaning me off this medication mm-hmm. that caused the akathisia. Mm-hmm. And for those of you that aren't familiar with it, as Derek said, it's an inner restlessness. But as I had mentioned to friends and to Derek as well, you know, it's just, you feel like you're entrapped because my mind is fully aware. Like I can see Derek getting frustrated with me because I'm not sleeping, but my body is somehow not allowing me to verbalize or to rest. You just feel like a prisoner in your own body and it's just wild.
It's horrible.
After what you've already been through.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So I spent another week in the hospital, but that was a little bit better because I was just weaning off the medication. It's funny because I was bored this time. I think because the last time I was in the hospital, I was so active doing all these things in psychosis that the second time I was like, oh, I can't do this like word search puzzle again, you know? But I was a lot better. I was a lot healthier. And then as Derek mentioned, I did end up going to the day hospital program that they were able to like bump my admittance like another week or so. Mm-hmm. And that was really good. That was like a 2 week day hospital program where I learned all these various coping strategies and all these ways to take care of myself and how to communicate that with Derek and with family and friends. And so we had a nice little cohort go through there and I still keep in touch with some of those folks to this day. So
great.
It was a good experience. Yeah.
So there was some kind of missteps along the way, just in terms of having access to resources that I think is really important to highlight. Because, right, like as you were saying, Derek, you don't need help a week from now. You need it. Like you need something in place when you leave the hospital, which is, you know, it's hard sometimes for systems to make that happen as quickly as it needs to happen. So like how frustrating was that for you guys?
Yeah, it was really, really hard. Again, I didn't know where to turn. We tried calling the hospital. We actually did get a hold of the psychiatric office that she had been set up with for outpatient care. And the woman that she was supposed to start seeing, the NP, was like, you know, we talked to her for a couple of minutes and she's like, oh yeah, stay the course and add Benadryl. So Benadryl is a common thing used to counteract the inability to sleep caused by akathisia. And it worked for like 2 days and then it didn't work anymore, you know? And so that was a stopgap but it didn't do enough. And I don't fault any of the individuals that we worked with, right? It's just, it's the system. is not set up. Even when I got a hold of the writer she had seen in the hospital, you know, and I expressed my frustration, she's like, yeah, it is incredibly frustrating. Like, she acknowledged it, right, and that she sort of was powerless to do anything about it, but that she felt for us. Mm-hmm. So yeah, she ended up back in the ER and then back in the hospital for 7 days.
So after coming, you know, out of the hospital and back into home and like regular life, you're still in the healing process. What is that like for you guys? What happens after? How do you guys cope and manage after?
Derek, why don't you go first?
Sure. So I will say, so if after her first hospital stay, she was 90% herself, the second hospital stay, she came back 99.9% herself. Once they weaned her off the one medication and got her on a different type of medication, worlds of difference, mm-hmm. worlds of difference. So that made it a lot easier to cope. I am the kind of person who, when I feel like things are out of control, I read everything. I was on the internet at 2 a.m., not super healthy, like Googling postpartum psychosis. How do I do this? How do I do that? And through that and through some friends that had given us some resources, we found PSI, or I found PSI, Postpartum Support International, which, shout out to them. They're a great organization. They have some really great resources on their website for caregivers. So they have some PDFs that you can look at, like, here's what to expect. Here's how you can be most supportive of your partner. And I read those PDFs, you know, a dozen times, like mm-hmm. just internalizing, what can I do when she comes home? How can I mm-hmm. do this? So a lot of it is, you know, supportive care. Hey, you're doing a great job. You're an awesome mom. You know, making sure that, you know, I gave her time with the baby, with me there in case she needed something, but like allow her to reconnect with Robbie now that she's back on the outside. Things like that. Finding support groups. So they have a weekly support group for people who are survivors or going through postpartum psychosis. And then they have a monthly support group for family members who have been affected. So I went to two of those sessions. That was insanely helpful. Just mm-hmm. hearing from other people who were going through it, or who had already gone through it and were sort of past it. You know, one of the major things that I got out of that was I had been really hesitant to ask for any kind of long-term help. So unfortunately, both of my parents have passed away, and Rowena, her father's no longer with us, but her mother lives in New Jersey. And I was really like hesitant to ask her mom to come down and help, just because I was like, I can handle this, you know, I can do it. And also, it's just, you know, I don't want to disrupt her life. Even though she's retired, she has friends and hobbies and things, and she's very involved with her church and stuff. And so I really didn't want to like have her come stay. I had her come down briefly to help with the baby and then send her back home. But going to the support group, it really, hearing everyone's stories and how everyone's lives had changed and how they had to accept help into their lives, and like, your family structure is going to change. Mm-hmm. That like flipped a switch in my brain. I was like, I need to ask my mother-in-law to come live with us. And she ended up coming and living with us for like 2.5 to 3 weeks mm-hmm. while Rowena was in her second hospital stay, and then continuing until Rowena got home and was home for a while. So that was incredibly helpful. You know, just hearing about that, you know, because I was so resistant to it. I was like, I can do this. I can handle this, you know. And even though I was asking for like small bits of help, I didn't want to ask for like a large help that big. Mm-hmm. So asking for help is absolutely important.
Right. Cause, I mean, because as you were saying before, there's the like the caregiver burnout, the mm-hmm. just, I mean, not because there's a burden of any kind, but because, or she's a burden of any kind is no. what I mean to say at all. But because you want to be caring for her, but you've got the kids and, you know, all these other things, like it's, we're supposed to have support.
Yeah. And also I will say that, you know, I did okay. Like, and most people kept asking me how I was, how are you handling it? Honestly, I was okay. I was taking care of the kids. You know, our daughter was going to daycare. I was with the baby and I was getting help when I, you know, at night or when I needed it or whatever. And then, but I was just at 100 or 110% for so long. A couple of weeks after Rowena had been home, I realized I like crashed. I went into like a depressive episode. Yep. And it took me a while to realize I didn't want to be around the baby. All I wanted to do was sleep and play video game. I wasn't back to work yet, you know, all those things. And I realized, and I was like, I need help. And I was seeing a therapist. I've seen a therapist mm-hmm. for a long time. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Mark. but I talked to him about it, and he was like, hey, why don't you talk to your primary care physician about just some medication? And I am on some medication, and it is very helpful. Gives me that kick in the pants that I need just to get back mm-hmm. to sort of a baseline. Mm-hmm. So nothing wrong with a little bit of help.
Absolutely.
Chemically or supportively, right?
Absolutely. And some of what you're describing, if I can just generalize for a moment, is like oftentimes after there's like a really intense situation and like one or two people, whoever, somebody has to just like hold on and keep going, basically like yeah. survival or pushing forward, once everything is okay, that like drop and dip is really common. So I'm glad you're sharing that. And thank you for sharing it, because other family members who are supporting somebody that they love so much might have that dip. And it is just something that happens to us after we've been through a big ordeal. So thank you for sharing that. And Rowena, what was that period of time like for you, kind of like reintegrating and having help around? And
I'm just so grateful that we have such an extensive like village of people who came in, you know, while I was at the hospital, during and afterward, that have been pouring their love and support for us. It's been, you know, I'm just so grateful for that. I will say that it was a bit of a process reintegrating myself to home and the family, especially, you know, as Derek said, like reengaging with the baby. I know at first, when I first got home, I was anxious, you know, a little nervous to like hold him and care for him and like really be like as involved, because I still had a lot of anxiety going into it. But luckily, through my day hospital program, as I mentioned, I was equipped with a lot of tools that I then started to engage into my practice. And, you know, this is something that I'm still dealing with to this day. I started a new job a little over a month ago, and I'm having some anxiety tied to the new work. So still integrating like the deep breathing and the affirmations and the, you know, like the tapping and everything to help me feel better. You know, is, even though I mentioned I had my kind of erratic writing at the start of this, writing after the fact has also been very healing and cathartic for me. I mentioned I wrote a series of blog posts that are called Letters from My Postpartum Psychosis. So I wrote them as like my psychosis is writing a letter to me. And that's been really healing for me. And that was a project that a lot of people, you know, some folks who I haven't talked to since college, you know, reaching out to me, messaging me, DMing me, saying, you know, sharing their stories of postpartum depression and anxiety and, you know, and mental health. So I think being able to do that was really helpful. And as Derek mentioned, Postpartum Psychosis International has been a great resource for both of us. And I've actually joined the task force for postpartum psychosis. So,
oh, fantastic.
Yeah. So continuing on with advocacy and wanting to do more similar and doing things like this, right? Like speaking on podcasts and sharing our story and letting people know that, yeah, this happens, but there are folks out here that have been through it and we're making it out the other side. And we're here to support and to share that you're not alone in this and that, you know, it is scary, but we can get through it.
Absolutely. It's a lot to go through. And you're right. Like having the support surrounding you is quite necessary. Well, I know there's so much more that you guys went through, and I really appreciate you sharing what you have. I know people will have learned a lot from your story and also how you've like supported each other and coped on the way through. It does absolutely like throw a bit of a wrench into things and bring in relationship challenges for sure. But I mean, you guys have all these great things in place to help you through it. And now this advocacy work is really a fantastic way to continue your healing, as you said before, sharing the story as part of the healing journey. So yeah, I thank you guys so much for being here and sharing with us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just, as a final thought, you know, if a lot of people that we have shared our story with had never heard of postpartum psychosis, and even those that had, they didn't know much about it. So, you know, it brings us joy. It's the silver lining around a very dark cloud that we're able to share our story and sort of like help people learn about this condition. And that, yes, it's very difficult, but there's light at the end of the tunnel. It's very curable. Not curable, it's very treatable, you know, very rarely result in any kind of long-term problem. So, you know, if you feel like you're going through this or you know someone going through this, it will be okay. please reach out for help.
Absolutely. Thank you guys again so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you'd like to get connected with Rowena, you can find her at rowenawinkler.com, and you can go to Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, and YouTube to RB Winkler PhD and connect with her there. If you or anybody that you know is dealing with a perinatal mental health condition, that's anytime through fertility, loss, pregnancy, birth, or postpartum, and you are concerned, or you yourself are concerned about your experience, please reach out and get help. Postpartum Support International has a ton of resources, free support groups, and a lot of resources to help you get connected to the help that you need through the therapist directory and through peer support. And if you're a provider who's looking to get more training, PSI also offers training for providers to be able to help and support people like Rowena and like Derek who are having perinatal mental health challenges. So for those resources, go to postpartum.net to get connected to help today. Thank you so much for being here. Until next time. Please find the Mom in Mind podcast on momandmind.com or wellmindperinatal.com, where you can also find access to my free online mini course that is specifically designed for people experiencing anxiety in the postpartum period. Or you can learn more about the 3.5-hour self-paced course that I created just for managing postpartum stress. You can also connect with us on social media at Mom and Mind on Instagram and Facebook. Thank you for tuning in and learning more about perinatal mental health.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.